Welcome to Conscious Bridge Radio, the program where we explore the evolution of spirituality, politics, and culture. Now here is your host, the author of four books, including Be Yourself and Our Spiritual Evolution, Mark Gilbert.
Thank you and welcome to Conscious Bridge Radio. I'm your host, Mark Gilbert. Today our program is entitled, The America We Want, The World We Want. We've got a slightly different format for today's program. If you've listened before, you know that normally I interview one or two guests, and that's the bulk of the time in the program, and we typically interview them right after their introduction. But today we're going to be doing it a little bit differently. I'm going to be exploring this topic of the America we want, the world we want, from a different angle, number of angles for a few minutes. And then after the break, we're coming back and we're going on the road and visiting with a couple of friends of mine at a restaurant. And we'll be exploring that topic as well, the America we want, the world we want. The reason I'm doing this is I hope that you will explore these questions in your own mind. I know in talking to some people that a lot of times we don't necessarily stop and think about what exactly is the type of country that we want? What are the characteristics of the United States that we'd really like to see in the world? And, you know, and because the United States is really part of a greater world stage, how does that feed into and support how the country shows up in the world? And so for the next few minutes, we're really going to be looking at that from a number of angles. And as I do that, I hope that you stop and think for yourself, you know, pause the program if necessary and reflect upon the question of what is the America you'd like to see? And then what are you doing to move us in that direction? So that's really where we're going today. Now, this is a question that I've been considering for a number of years. I wrote about it in a book, Be Yourself, Evolving the World Through Personal Empowerment. I'll come back to that book in a moment, but the genesis of today's program really came from a series of monthly programs sponsored by the Coffee Party. And as you know, this program is part of the Coffee Party USA radio network of shows. And I support the Coffee Party in a number of ways. And one of the ways we've been working through the campaigns and actions aspect of the Coffee Party is to sponsor a series of what we're calling Coffee Party Talks. Now, the Coffee Party Talks is a really worthwhile program. I encourage you to check it out by going to the CoffeePartyUSA.com website. The link is on the radio program's website. And when you're there, you will find one of the submenus entitled Coffee Party Talks, and it will tell you all of the details about the program. But briefly, what it is that you get to invite the people of your choosing at the time and location of your choosing in for a discussion, a roundtable discussion around a particular topic. And there's a theme for each of a number of months that are recommended by the Coffee Party. For the month of September, the topic is the America that we want to see, the America we want to see. And it is a good topic. It's one that resonated so much with me that I actually wrote a blog around it recently on my website. Now, again, I encourage you to check out my website, consciousbridge.com. There is a recent blog there, however, entitled, How Do You See Us Acting in the World? How do you see us acting in the world? And that blog was actually written because of a couple of questions that are the sample questions used for the dialogue and the Coffee Party Talks. Two of those questions are, how do you see the U.S. acting in the world, and how do you want the U.S. to act? And of course, those questions are driven by a U.S. as representing the America, United States. But in my blog, I took that to also mean us. The question I posed in the blog was, how do you see yourself acting in the world, and how do you really want to act? And there's two different ways we can look at this. One is, do you approach others with kindness and dignity and respect? Do you attempt to help them? Do you attempt to make the world a better place through your actions and choices? Or on the other hand, do you approach others with suspicion, anger, indifference? Do you ignore help when it's offered to you? Do you see the great world out there as some unknown other that you're either in competition with or you're trying to make the world a better place, even at their expense? And sometimes we break the world down in that way. We either see it as a connection of love or a connection of fear. And that's the ultimate sense of what the blog was about. I also tried to make it cascade upward from a sense of your own personal actions in the world to how, when you and I get together, then we're in us. How do we act collectively? Do we act out of fear? Do we act out of love? And ultimately taking it to the national level or the action level of the United States and looking at it from a standpoint of, is our country showing up from a standpoint of care and concern for a greater number of people? Or is it one where it sees the world as some great other out there to be manipulated and controlled? Anyway, I encourage you to check out the blog. And that was whole article was driven by the same set of questions sponsored by the Coffee Party and as part of the Coffee Party Talks. But as I mentioned a moment ago, the topic of looking at the world that we want is one that's really been on my mind for a number of years. I've written several books, and my first book, Empowerment. Now, this book, I was compelled to write it because I saw that the world was really at a choice point, that when we look out at the world, we see a lot of crises and areas where it's less than what we think the world should exist in, you know, in terms of our experience, and that the things that we're experiencing that are less than what we desire are really reminders to us, calls to us to move us in our world into a greater direction, move us to a world that we'd like to create. And I say that that choice point has three ways in which we can redirect us towards a world that works for everyone. And those choice points are those three action steps. One was really to focus more on how we're alike than how we're different. I know that a lot of times we tend to focus on our differences, but the book encourages us and has a series of exercises designed to make us look more at the ways in which we are common with one another. And that's not to say that we should all be, you know, walking lockstep together, and, you know, we should value the diversity of the world. But there really is a sense that at our core level, we're all human beings moving through this life. That we're all spiritual at our essence, in my belief, and that otherworldly aspect of ourselves, though, is moving through a third-dimensional experience that is very common. And even though we might have been born into different countries and different cultures, might have been born male or female, we might have gone through a different set of experiences and all different sets of beliefs, that at our essence, we have a lot of similarities. And as we keep that in our minds, that the similarities and that focus that will drive our interest and attention towards that rather than focusing on our differences. That's the first key step. The second aspect of the book and how it recommends that we move towards a world that works for everyone is that we have a common vision, that to the degree possible, we create and hold a vision for that world that would work for everyone. And the book goes into some sense of what that looks like. And that's what I'm going to come back to that in a second. And the third aspect or third key to moving us to a higher future was to find your inner calling, to find that aspect of yourself as your purpose in life. I think all of us do have a guiding purpose or a gift that we were given when we come to the planet. And the book, I'd say the bulk of the book is really exercises and techniques to help design towards identifying through looking at your life's patterns and looking at your intuitive knowingness as to what your life calling is, and then to put it into place, find some way of having your action steps in your life move you such that you're actually living from a space of giving and providing your gifts to the planet. I think when you do that, you really will have a sense of joy and enjoy life at a higher level than when you're doing something that doesn't feed your soul. So those are the three steps the book says. So again, the book is all about we're at a choice point. We can go down the road of negativity, or we can create a world that works for all. And the world that works for all is one where we focus on our commonalities rather than our differences, focus on a common vision for the future, and we all move ourselves into living our calling. So that said, the middle part of the book is the one that really relates to our conversation here. And by that, I mean, if we're talking about the U.S. that we want to experience, the America we want, or the world that we want, we really need to say, what is it that we want? when we look out at the world, what do we really want to experience in terms of the United States and the world itself? In my book, one of the things I actually interestingly did was I went and studied a selected list of scientists, mystics, and philosophers to see where they said we might be going from an evolutionary standpoint, and then found from those people some common themes. And these are people who are looking at life from an evolutionary lens. They look at the world and they say, not necessarily that it's a given that this is where we're going, but from the trends that they see from science, mystical experiences, and philosophy, there are areas where they say this is where they ultimately believe that humanity and the world and planet Earth will end up. And some of the common things, just reading from the book, is that these individuals have a tendency to see that we're moving towards greater complexity in all of our systems. I think we could probably all agree with that. There's a greater ability to consciously control the evolutionary process. That may be a stretch for a lot of you to believe, but I think that we truly are coming to a place where either through technology or through the power of our thoughts, we are actually having an impact on the direction which evolution is leading us. Ultimately, I see that there is less of a focus on our basic deficiency needs, using Abraham Maslow's terms, and more a focus on our higher needs. In other words, more people are having the safety, security, physiological needs, love and belongingness, etc., met, and they're free to work on higher needs such as developing a higher degree of self-esteem, working on self-actualization. And in fact, when you're living your purpose, I think that you're actually self-actualizing. Another common theme I found in these individuals was that we're moving towards less focus on material needs and a greater focus on spiritual needs, greater levels of cooperation among people, greater knowledge transferred to the next generation via learning, expanding technological accomplishments, a movement towards a melding of science and spirituality, an increased emphasis on living life's callings or purpose, greater levels of human service to one another, and an expanding power of love in the world, leading us to sense greater senses of interconnectedness to our fellow human beings, and ultimately a greater degree of our sense of oneness. And I think a lot of the findings in science, especially when we look at quantum physics, truly point to this is a direction in which we are heading. Yet, although my book pointed out a number of common themes that scientists, mystics, and philosophers seem to be pointing at in terms of our evolutionary future, that necessarily painted a complete vision. So if we're looking for like a vision statement or something that's really going to compel us to bring us forward, it's not cutting it. However, in my book, I actually tried to craft one, and I will do it from a personal standpoint, from a personal vision, by using the words I, but we could also use the words we if we wanted this to be a collective vision of our future. But what I saw in terms of the direction that they say that we're going, and if I put that into a vision statement for myself, it would read like the following. That my vision is I have all of my basic physical needs easily met, that I have good health, I have a nice home that protects me from the elements, I live in a society that assures me basic freedoms and safety, I have a good education and an opportunity to grow, and I have a network of friends and family who love me. I have the opportunity to grow my standard of living to a comfortable level, and I have the opportunity to express my creative abilities. I have the opportunity to develop my spiritual nature, and I answer my calling to be of service to others. Now, you can agree or disagree that would be a personal vision statement for yourself, but I think it's one that it's worth thinking about. And again, the whole purpose of this conversation today and this presentation is designed to get you thinking about what is the America you want and what is the world that you want. So the America we want and the world we want actually begins with the individual level, with us going back and taking a look at our individual lives and considering what we want out of our own life, and then taking that from the singular me, I, to the collective we. And so I encourage you, if you haven't done this recently, to stop and put down a mission or vision statement for yourself. What is your life about and where is it headed? One of the other things that I did in this book, Be Yourself, Evolving the World Through Personal Empowerment. And by the way, if you're interested in the book, the link to the book is on the radio program's website. One of the things I tried to do is say, is there anybody out there who's actually putting forth a collective vision for the future that maybe we can all focus on? And when I looked around and I looked at a number of options, I'm not going to go into all of them right now. If you're interested in that, you can and review it in the book. But I ultimately started looking at the United Nations and some of the language that they had put out. One of the documents that I found from the United Nations was something that they published in September 2000 called the Millennium Declaration. And it's a 9-page document that goes on to outlining specific values and actions that the UN sees as important for the 21st century. It's broken into different categories like freedom, equality, solidarity, tolerance, respect for nature, shared responsibility. And under each of these headings are a number of items that are basically descriptions. Such, for example, under freedom, you know, that men and women have the right to live their lives and raise their children in dignity, free from hunger and from fear of violence, oppression, or injustice. There's a democratic and participatory governance based on the will of the people that best assures those rights exist. And, you know, and it goes on from there. I really like this declaration statement and encourage you to seek it out and read the language for yourself. The other thing that I found from the United Nations that was really interesting was that they had created the Millennium Development Goals. These were a set of goals that were created around the year 2000 that were set to give us benchmarks for things that we would move towards by the year 2015. There were 8 broad categories to the Millennium Development Goals, and they were, first, eradicate extreme poverty and hunger. Secondly, was achieve universal primary education. Third was promote gender equality, empower women. Fourth was reduce child mortality rates. And fifth was improve maternal health. Sixth, combat HIV, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases. Sixth was ensure environmental sustainability, and seventh was to develop a global partnership for development. Now, under each of those 8 headings were a number of benchmark goals that really were targets, like certain specific targets on reducing the number of people living on less than a dollar a day, for example, or targets on the number of girls who have access to education. All laudable goals for here in our Western culture, but when we look around the world, recognize there's many people living below less than a dollar a day, and many girls who don't have access to education. So all the goals may seem more pertinent for the remainder of the world rather than the Western world. They really speak to lifting up the entire world so that people have their basic needs met. Again, moving towards that idea of moving up Maslow's hierarchy. So the development goals were listed and discussed in the book, but of course, after the book came out, 2015 came and went. And in the interim, the United Nations actually developed more goals. They looked at the successes they had made on the Millennium Development Goals up through the year 2015 and said, where do we want to go in the future? Where is it that we want to take the world? And from that, they created something called the Sustainable Development Goals. Now, there's a link to the Sustainable Development Goals on the website for the radio program. And if you're not familiar with them, I highly encourage you to check them out. In fact, I think these goals are so important. When I actually began the Conscious Bridge radio program almost a year ago, the very first program that I had, and the very first guest I had, was a spokesperson for the United Nations who came on to talk about the goals themselves and some of the measurable things they were doing to move them forward and ways in which people like you and I could get involved in trying to support those goals. I encourage you to go back and, you know, and listen to that program. You can find the archive of it on the website, either on consciousbridge.com or the Coffee Parties Radio Show Program Network website. But also, like as I mentioned, there's a link on the radio show's website for linking to the Sustainable Development Goals. The interesting thing about the goals created for 2015, which are set to take us through the year 2030, was that there was an extensive set of public input from around the world into actually what are the goals that we want to see for the planet. And they gathered input under the program name, The World We Want 2030, The World We Want 2030. And in fact, the website that www.worldwewant2030.org will take you to the Sustainable Development Goals, where you can find out what they are. And I like that these were driven by people all around the planet. In fact, when they put the website out and before they narrowed down and created the goals, I wrote a blog about it on Conscious Bridge. I went in and provided my own input, and I encouraged through social media and other contacts with my network for people to provide their input as well. Although they've locked the goals down for 2015 through 2030, I think they're well worth reviewing and looking at from a standpoint of considering what is the world that you want. And so again, I'm encouraging you to answer those questions for yourself. So what is the America we want? What is the world we want? How are you answering those questions? In a moment after the break, we'll come back and explore how a few people have given me their own answers to that question. And so we'll get back to that right after this message.
Hi, this is Debbie Lynn Molyneux, president of Coffee Party USA. I hope you're enjoying this program, which is part of the Coffee Party's radio network of shows. Have you ever wondered exactly what is the Coffee Party? Well, have you ever brought up the subject of politics and watched as people roll their eyes? Well, Coffee Party is an all-volunteer nonprofit to encourage respectful conversation around politics. We want people to connect with each other in a more meaningful way. Coffee Party supports reforms of our electoral, campaign finance, government accountability, and tax systems. We also promote cultural changes to address political disengagement, polarization, and misinformation. Won't you come join us? Check out our website and find out how you can get involved as a member and a volunteer of Coffee Party USA today. Help bring civility and reason back to our political process. Go to coffeepartyusa.com to find out more. That's coffeepartyusa.com. Thank you.
Hi, Mark Gilbert again. I hope you're enjoying this radio program. I invite you to also check out the Conscious Bridge website at www.consciousbridge.com or see the link on the radio program's website. There, I've been sharing my exploration of the evolution of spirituality, politics, and culture for the past 6 years. You'll find descriptions and links of all four of my books, as well as years of articles, free audios, videos, listings and links to numerous resources, and be sure and sign up for my newsletter as well. If you do, you'll get a free gift from me. All of this and a whole lot more at consciousbridge.com. Now back to our program. Welcome back. We're exploring the question today, what is the America we want? What is the world that we want? I hope that the introduction in the first part of the program has really got your mind considering that, but you probably want to move to a space of thinking in terms of practicalities and how would you actually phrase the vision you have for the world and our country. To get some feedback on that particular question, though, I went out to social media and I posted on my Twitter page and on my Facebook pages the question and ask people to give me their input. And I also looked at some of the feedback that came in on my blog that I referenced in the first part of the program, because it really, the feedback that came in really referenced the people's visions towards the world. So I'd like to share some of that with you in this moment, and we can reflect upon it. But so here's one post that I received from an individual who responded. They said that the United States has basically become a land of the sacred money and market philosophy where truth no longer exists. I prefer a world that is local first, then reaching out to global interest, where tolerance and humility are cherished. Very interesting. You know, what I'm hearing in this respondent is some of the same feelings that I believe have given rise to people who were excited about Bernie Sanders and his campaign, as well as many of the people who were drawn to Trump this year. That there's a sense that the American system, to a degree, is broken or it's overly controlled by financial interest. And so, you know, what we would want in there is that the country comes back to a sense of being controlled by the people, that it's a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, rather than being one that's all driven by, as this person put it, sacred money and market philosophy. So, you know, I understand that. I think there's a lot of people who would resonate with a sense of moving us out of being controlled by financial interest only. Let's look at another response that I got. Another person wrote, I want to live in a democracy. I want to have choices when I vote, more than two choices. I want the disadvantaged to be the priority in this country, not just the elite. I want every person educated to the hilt according to his abilities. I want to be creative rather than technical. I want the USA to provide tools, but not to worship them. I don't know about you, but I'm hearing in that response a very similar thing that what we heard in the first one, is there's a sense of concern that the country's priorities are out of whack, that I think the income inequality is in our country is being driven by a lot of the comment here, that the elite seem to be in control, elite meaning the ruling class or the wealthy, and they're looking for a country where it's a country that's provides for everybody, where everybody gets an opportunity for an education, that we provide tools for people to uplift them. Good response. Here's a third response that I got off of social media. This person wrote, functional, representative, responsive, money-free. It works and people support it. Now, again, they're looking at the question of what is the America that you want? And they want an America that's functional, i.e. it works, it's representative. I think, again, we have a sense that the representatives work more for corporations and moneyed interest. I think that's reflected in that comment, that it's responsive, that, you know, it figures out what are the needs of people, actually. Doesn't America and our government and our country exist for us rather than for corporations? It's money-free. I'm not sure what they mean by money-free there, but certainly maybe they mean the same thing that the other respondents said, in that it's not overly controlled by money. I think, you know, governments need to operate through have a financial aspect to them, but certainly not to be overly controlled by money. Let's look at one more response. This person wrote, there are two basic philosophies of life, live and let live, kill or be killed, it is your choice. Read that again. There are two basic philosophies of life, live and let live, kill or be killed, it's your choice. You know, I'm not sure I would choose those exact words, but I certainly understand the point the person is trying to make, that there's two ways in which we can look out at the world. And that's actually, I believe, the point that I was making on my blog that I wrote recently that I referenced in the first part of the program, i.e. that we can either respond to the world out of a sense of fear or out of a sense of love. We can either look out and see that we are connected and interdependent in this world, or that we are separate and apart from this world. And if we sense that ourselves are part of a greater interdependence, then we're going to be someone who has a degree of care and concern for how everything goes. And that may be what this person means by live and let live, that we find what our purpose is in life, or we find what it is we want to do in life, and we do it without harming others. So that's, or kill or be killed. And I think that's the side of life where we're living out of fear and competition. So I would call it that we look at life as we're either interdependent and are driven to be motivated by love, or we see ourselves as separate and apart, and we're driven by fear and competition. This person says, live and let live, kill or be killed. But a very similar kind of sense there. Let's look at one more social media response that I got. This person wrote, again, the question, what is the America that you want? And they wrote political tags such as royalist, communist, Democrat, populist, fascist, liberal, conservative, and so forth are never basic criteria. The human race divides politically into those who want people to be controlled and those who have no such desire. The former are idealist, acting from highest motives for the greatest good of the greatest number. The latter are surly curmudgeons, suspicious and lacking in altruism. But they are more comfortable neighbors than the other sort. Now, they reference this entire statement as being a quote by Robert Heinlein. I think it gets at the very similar point that the other person put by live and let live and kill or be killed is putting people into two camps, seeing the world in two groups of people. In this particular Heinlein quote, that instead of these political tags that we like to give on people, which sometimes is a distraction, that this person and Heinlein, and their referencing of this quote, is dividing us into two groups. Those who want to be to control people, and those who have no desire to control people. And those who want to control people probably see it as life as being all about competition and fear and the other. And those who don't want to control people don't see it that way. And one is acting, he says, the idealist acting from the highest motives for the greatest good. You know, although I think that you can act from the greatest good for the greatest number, out of a sense of feeling, a sense of connectedness, that you don't feel like you necessarily need to control people. I don't think that control, and I guess I'm disagreeing with Heinlein in this quote, I don't think that the idea of wanting the greatest good for the greatest number automatically leads you into a sense that you need to control other people. But I certainly get the idea and see the point. So these are some responses that other people have said. You know, I'd like to maybe do something a little different at this point. And what we're going to do is take a road trip. And I mentioned this at the beginning of the program. I recently posed the question to a couple of friends of mine. We meet at a restaurant once a month for our mastermind session. And I will talk about that. I want to mention that in this recording, which I have edited for clarity, but it's still a little difficult to hear some of the comments. I apologize for that, but I think the conversation is worth listening to because it's a good reflection on, and hopefully will spur some thoughts within your own mind about the America that you would like to be and see in the world. So we're going to go on a road trip to Teller's Restaurant and my friends Craig and Alan, and we talk about this topic.
All right. Hi, this is Mark again. We're here at Teller's Restaurant in Lakewood, Colorado. I'm here with my good friends Craig Lang and Alan Weingarten. We meet regularly about once a month here. And we call it our mastermind group. It's primarily a session for us to catch up on what's going on in the world, in our individual lives, and to also give guidance and support to one another on our goals for where we're going in the near and long-term future for ourselves. So it's a way of holding ourselves accountable for those things that we call our intentions. In any case, I'm here with Alan and Craig to talk about this month's theme and topic, which is the America we want to be, the world we would like to see. And I'm putting that question out there, and we'll just see where it goes. You know, and for me, and I think I mentioned this before we started the recording, is that the Coffee Party is doing a session of Coffee Party Talks around this topic. And it's one that's really resonated with me. I can go back to some of the writings I've done over the last number of years. They've all been driven by the fact that we start with a vision. We know what it's important for us to start in our minds with what we want to see. And it's from that creation of that vision that we actually then put the seeds in place in our own mind and consciousness to start moving towards the life that we'd like to create. And so I think that's why it's important for each of us to focus on looking at our individual lives as well as our collective culture of the United States. What kind of country we would like this to be? And as we're in the midst of very contentious political situation with Trump and Clinton. It's an interesting time for us to think about what is the outcome we'd like to see, not so much of the election, but of the world and the stuff. So I just throw the question out there and see what you guys think about what kind of America would you like to see?
Well, a couple things come to mind, and that being, number one, the first thing we have to do is really get in touch with where are we today. Because once we have a vision, and once we have, but if we're not in touch with this moment and really what's going on, then I think it makes it difficult to figure out how to get to the vision. Mm-hmm. And what I see right now is the America we have has really become focused on special interest groups, and also the maybe the materialistic side of things. And in just getting back from Peru, the idea of service to the community, where I've discovered, for me anyhow, the secret of life is helping others. And so that really feels good. And then I had this novel idea of what if the military's role had changed? And this is a new idea for me, but I love it. And what if the military's role, instead of being, you know, the powerful, developing the sophisticated weapons, what if we traveled around the world and made people's lives better? And so we deployed those things to building schools and roads and helping people around the world. It would be much, we would be kind of a light as opposed to a dark energy. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of my thing, is that we're making the world a better place for others instead of trying to force our ideas and will on them with energy, dark energy, and threats and killing people, most of the time innocent people.
Yeah. You know, Alan, I really like that because it harkens back to like Kennedy in the days of the Peace Corps in a way. And there's been a lot of times in our country we've talked about the idea of having like mandatory service when somebody comes out of high school. I've often thought that the jump from high school to college goes prematurely, that you're not quite mature enough to know what you want to do with college, and that maybe a year or two of service would be a wonderful way of doing it. But what I like about your idea is that people say, well, we've got too much money invested in our military-industrial complex. And so because of that, how do we shift those people and their interest in making money through the funding of our military, if we can somehow or another capture their interest to say, well, let's, instead of making bombs and weapons, how can we use the contractors and their companies to make stuff that would up-level the standard of living for the world? So we could actually be the sort of breadbasket creators, the ones who teach people how to fish in a way. So,
and that is exactly what the Incans said, is if they take over a culture, they have a responsibility to teach them how to use agriculture and how to use weaving and all these things to raise that thing. So then we would be improving people's lives as opposed to what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. All well-intended, but with miserable results.
Yeah. And what about you, Craig? How do you see, what is the America you would like to see or experience in your life when you look out?
Piggybacking on what Alan was saying, it's interesting that I revert to an exchange program I was involved in as I was in college my junior year abroad. And as a military expense, the amount of money spent on what we do to protect and serve what we call freedom and liberties in this country, I find a lot of that could go into everybody being required to do a exchange program. So in that age group you're talking about, after high school or the college level age, to maybe experience living somewhere else around the world for five or six different places throughout 2 to 5 years of your life, that allows us to really get into their environment and sense what it's like to walk a mile in their shoes, as opposed to giving our impression of what we think everybody should live as, based on a standard of how we've been raised. And therein is the other part of the question on my end of just what came to mind for me was America that my parents used to know, that basically passed me their baton, or are continuing to do so now, 50, 60, 70 years later. Mm-hmm. And I still sense that there was America in its heyday, an exploration environment or cultural sense where opportunity was endless, and it was a creative world, medium for everybody to influences, be it the military, religion, or politics. And yet, as a culture, we all seem to be doing something right because the rest of the world has looked at us as an inspiration. So to be part of the solution is my interest as much as anything, rather than ongoing building walls and being separate or protecting ourselves is truly something that we can all gain from as humanity goes forward.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things you said there that come to mind is that, you know, the people out around the world want to come to the United States. They see us as the shining example, yet we that live here sometimes see the warts in our country.
Exactly.
And but I'm also thinking about, I'll paraphrase the quote from Mark Twain, who basically said the biggest antidote to prejudice and small-mindedness was world travel and spending time in other cultures. And I know we've all traveled, and I think, but you encounter people who've never been outside the United States, and they tend to think the entire world acts and operates like we are here. Yet when you go other places, you learn that there are value in the uniqueness of those individual cultures and what they're doing. And so, and thank you for serving us today.
Yeah.
No, can I get some more coffee when you get a chance?
Yeah.
So, and I'll probably leave that in. But the other thought is the idea of mandatory travel, and maybe the idea of service and some kind of getting us out of our culture is a good thing. And maybe the world we're talking about is one where people come up and they have their basic needs met, and then they have an education that involves service, which would harken back to what Alan was talking about, and also travel, an involvement in meeting and experiencing other cultures like you're talking about. But if there was another theme in your comment there that I want to pick up on, because I hear it in the message of a lot of people who are supporting Donald Trump right now. You know, his message is to make America great, and I think there's a lot of people who want to go back to a time when they think that we were greater than we are now. And yet, when we really, truly reflect back on that time, there were a lot of warts in that time, where a lot of racism and prejudice, and there wasn't an opportunity for everybody that there is now.
But an opportunity of being creative and finding a solution by knowing there was always something there to be discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like we've reached a crescendo and we're happy to be where we're at, and then maintain that as a barrier of what we have yet to find or discover going forward still. Mm-hmm. So the kids today are prime examples of that. Even in the last decade, you now don't see a single soul, and this is probably universally, that carries a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So technology has certainly taken over the last decade or two of what we used to be known as having some form of independency and not dependent on new technology, which is at our fingertips.
Yeah,
it's pretty powerful, and yet they're going to be taking that baton forward as well in a different fashion than what we've been used to.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of my parents and I'm thinking of old car shows and I see 50-year-old cars, it just brings smiles to my face because you can go back in time and think, yeah, America was great. Our parents did live in a great time. But the now time is just as great when you realize going to the moon and space travel or air travel and the conveniences of life are remarkably spoiling.
Yeah, and some of those conveniences like the internet and the cell phones and such, they allow us to connect with the shadow side of our culture, to see some of those warts that maybe were pushed under the surface back in the 50s. You know, so how do we bring, back the... What I'm hearing in your comment is the vision that we capture the creative spirit that existed in the 40s and 50s, the post-World War II excitement, yet at a one that transcends it and brings an inclusiveness in that didn't exist for all people of all types. And I think that's where we're really talking about, is tapping that cultural creative spirit.
And I think it's a relatively easy solution. And it's the, if you go back to the old story about giving people fish or teaching them how to fish. And I honestly think that everyone wants to be a contributing member of the world society, and we've taken away that by giving people too many fish. And so if we empower them and teach them how to fish, then they can teach their kids how to fish, and everybody feels better. We have more people contributing to the good of the world. And that, I really believe, is it, because you feel better when you've gone an extra step, when you've helped someone. The same with education. I mean, there's a lot of power in that. Mm-hmm. Even though it may not make big corporations rich, which I think kind of drives a lot of the agendas, both politically and economically. Mm-hmm. What will make people rich? And I think, well, all the studies say that after a very modest level of income, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It becomes a job keeping your stuff, which we have too much of.
Well, as our group goes, this has landed something that's now going on for several years to find to be a diamond in the rough of how we seem to spend our time together, being free-willy and open-minded and creative as well, which I have to say is something I look forward to in my life. It completes me to be of service because of it. It's something very commendable that most people don't slow down enough to enjoy taking what it is out of a friendship. It comes from exchanging thoughts and ideas sometimes.
Yeah, that's a, you know, it's an interesting thing, and I always like to tie it back to Maslow's hierarchy. You know, we get our basic needs met, you know, of, and here in America, most of us have our basic needs met, and then we get into those higher needs above, you know, physical safety, security, love, and belonging. Just, many of us get mired in self-esteem, and then don't even often make the leap into trying to seek self-actualization or becoming all they can become in their lifetime. And they get in that cycle of tying their life to is their self-esteem is tied to material wealth,
right?
And so they chase the material wealth, the bigger salary, the better job, the bigger car. And at some point, you know, a maturity of that recognizes that, yes, a standard of living is needed to a certain level, but above that, you don't need that. You know, back to what you were saying a moment ago, Alan, and it's really about those higher levels of our needs. And so one of the needs we have is for deepening in our understanding of life, deepening in our connection with other people. So I agree with what you just said, Craig, that these experiences or these get-togethers are valuable to me because my basic needs are met, but the need that I often have that's not met is the opportunity to share ideas and, with like-minded people or even with people who differ than me in many opinions so they can challenge me to think differently and see life a little bit differently and through that process grow a little bit in my understanding of what it means to be a human being.
You bet. And to exercise your freedom of expressing yourself unconditionally and be able to have a discussion rather than calling it an opinion that you stick by.
Yeah.
Be judgmental or critical in ways of being. So.
And I also think that the idea of interacting with people that have different perspectives and asking how they got to that spot and why they think that way, it broadens our experience and it gives us more of a worldview. Mm-hmm. Where if we surround ourselves with just people that have the exact same views, we really are exposing ourselves to huge risks. Mm-hmm. Because if we want everyone to think like an American, which we've tried worldwide, we've come to the realization that it doesn't work because they have a different perspective, a different history. But if we can embrace those and get their perspectives, then it's instead of me, it's we.
Right.
And we can move forward boldly as a we because we've got each other's backs.
Yeah. And so then to summarize here, I think the America that we want to see is one where we're a world leader in bringing that sense of we-ness, sense of connectedness to the rest of the planet. That it's not the United States versus the rest of the world. It's us as a player helping to up-level the basic standard of living for the world, and through that, allowing people to move up Maslow's hierarchy and be free to be creative and express their unique talents. And through that, America grows, too. America learns the diversity of the world. It also doesn't lose anything in that too. It gains much. It, we feel like we're in competition with the world and need to win financially or however. But we're really, in a sense, moving from that sense of competition to cooperation. And through that, we'll grow with a higher sense of connectedness to the rest of the world and a greater sense of appreciation for the cultural diversity of the planet. Any other final thoughts from you guys on this before we...
Well, the only last piece was, I think those ideas are exactly like love. So love is the only thing you can give away and you end up better off. So there's more of it. So you can give it away and give it away and you feel better and the world is better around you.
Mm. like that.
Yes, and I would conclude the same, is when you feel good, it seems you become a magnet for other people wanting to be in your presence. So by setting an example coming from love, happiness, and joy, there's a magic that we get to walk our talk, as opposed to just putting our ideas out there without supporting it from a heartfelt sense.
Well, I don't think I can add any more to that other than to say thank you for letting me co-opting our time here together for a little while for this conversation, and hope the listeners out there enjoy it.
Awesome.
Okay, so here we are again back in the studio, and as we come to a conclusion here, I just want to offer several points for your reflection. Again, the whole point of today's show is to consider that we need a vision for where we're going in the future. A lot of times we tend to get busy in our lives and just get so wrapped up in the doingness of life that we tend to forget about where is it that we want to go. I think it was Stephen Covey who said sometimes, we can be so busy climbing a ladder that we get to the top of a wall and realize we've put our ladder against the wrong wall. And I think the same thing can exist for us when we spend a lot of effort into the United States and the world moving, and we don't give any reflection about where we would like to go collectively as a people. So hopefully this conversation and this program today has encouraged you to reflect upon that particular question in your own mind. As the Bible says, where there is no vision, the people perish. To quote Covey again, Covey also says that we should also begin with the end in mind. That was one of his seven essential habits of highly effective people. And I think it's a one that should always be a guiding principle for everything in our life, that as we're looking out and where we want to go and what we want to do, that we should always stop and reflect about what is it we want to see in the end game. What is it that we want to actually experience? So to that degree, there's a couple of thoughts that I just want to end us with. In my mind, the perfect world and the world that I would like to see in America that I would like to see is one where everyone is free to have their basic needs met. Again, referencing back to Abraham Maslow and his hierarchy of needs, I would love to see that we have an America and a world where everyone has basic needs met. Now, that gets into a lot of political discussions, I know, regarding whether it is welfare and handouts, or how do we go about encouraging people to have a basic standard of living. I think it's been explored in some countries that they provide at least a basic level of income to people. But I think as we get into political debates around things such as the minimum wage and things of that nature, that we should always keep in mind that it's important that every person should have be afforded a high degree of dignity and respect. And one of those things is if they're working, they should have an income that allows them to at least have a basic level of a standard of living that provides for their shelter and food and clothing and basic needs. Beyond that, I think people need to also have, once their needs are met, to be able to be free to move to higher needs, to focus on things such as what does it mean to be alive as a human, and what are your special gifts and talents? That calls forth for people to have access to certain levels of education. If we don't have a basic education where we teach people how to think, how to seek out information in the world and to know what's real and what's not real, what's true and what's not true, some basic skills in analyzing information and coming to worthwhile conclusions that are valid, I think are key aspects of what I would see in any kind of a country and world. So there's a degree of education, so basic support and education, that there's access to quality health care, that people have a need to have their physical bodies and taken care of, as well as their mental health. How do we get to these things? We can discuss and we can disagree on the details. But I think once we realize that people everywhere have at least, by the inherent right of being a human being, have the right to experience certain basic standard of living, I think that is what I think is the America that we would want to experience. I got to add that I really liked some of the ideas that came out of the discussion with Craig and Alan. I had no idea where that was going to go, but the entire reflection regarding basic levels of developing our service, by maybe looking at an America that provides opportunities for us to serve other people and grow a sense of service orientedness in our own lives by providing to the world through our levels of service is a great idea. The way of moving beyond the borders of the U.S. and having experience of other cultures and countries allows the world to be a wiser place regarding what it means to be human on this planet. It's not all just American-centric stuff. I love the idea that came out regarding the fact that maybe we provide a retooling of our military-industrial complex towards corporations and moneyed interests who still can make a profit, but if the profits are not driven towards war but are driven towards support. I think that many of us can look at where the U.S. has gone in and unfortunately had unintended consequences of creating more people who dislike the U.S. based on our military actions. Whereas if we had come in and done those things that taught people how to fish and uplifted their lives through levels of support, that would have perhaps endeared them to America and we would have less enemies. So I think that the America that I want is one that provides our basic needs and looks at us as a major player in the world for seeing the world as one and being a leader in providing a basic standard of living and support for all. Teach the world to fish. What do you think? So the question to you and the question we're posed today is, what is the America we want and what is the world we want? I hope you've reflected on that question today, and you know, I'd love to hear from you. Go to consciousbridge.com, post me a note, send me an email, send me some sort of feedback. Love to hear your thoughts on what it is, the America that you would want. Thanks for listening to the program today. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope that you'll tune in next time for our next program on Conscious Bridge Radio. Until then, take care.